Welcome or welcome back to Self-Work. I'm Dr. Margaret. We're going to be talking about abuse and whether you allowed it or not today. But first, let's hear from our sponsors. This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. Second, what it tells me or suggests to me, although I'm not absolutely certain, that somehow that allowance or that self-blame helped them push away the reality of the pain that was inherent in their family, that no one protected them, that no one was there for them or took care of them. That really hurts and hurts deeply. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. One listener told me recently that she wondered for a long time, did I allow my abuse? How many of you feel shame about this or even blame? And does that blame make it even more important to keep what happened secret? You bet it can. It's this irrational shame and blame we're going to tackle today on Self-Work, because you're looking back on what happened with the eyes of an adult, not through the eyes of the child you were. Blaming is even a way of distancing yourself or discounting the actual problems that existed. Because basically, if you blame yourself, then you modify or discount the chaos or the emptiness of what exactly the situation was. If you make something simple like, it was all my fault, which you were told often anyway, but that's not the rational thing to do. It's far more complicated than that. And sometimes that complication is even more painful to actually see and accept than blaming yourself. Our listener voicemail asks a simple question. How can I help my daughter, who fits your description of perfectly hidden depression, to a T? I'm so scared for her. I'll answer that to the best of my ability and actually get asked this question quite a lot. It's a great question because it's respecting or sensing how difficult it might be for your loved one to look at themselves with compassion and to be seen. And another inherent question might be, although this listener didn't ask it, did I do something to create this in my daughter? And how can we talk about that? Both of these topics emerge from your emails and voicemails, so thank you. I love that you send them, and it's a great way to start off 2025. Speaking of a great way to start off 2025, let's hear from AG1. When AG1 first approached me about sponsoring Self-Work, I of course had to try it. I not only loved it because I could tell an improvement in my overall energy level, I could tell a difference in how my body felt, how even with my busy schedule, I could count on my body doing what it was supposed to do every day. And now there are studies being published showing that what I've been feeling is backed up by science. In one study, 97% of participants felt digestion improved after 90 days of drinking AG1. And in another, the actual composition of the microbes in your gut changed for the better. Add that to the fact that AG1 is in powder form, so it's easier for your body to digest. What good is a supplement if your body can't absorb and use it? So start with AG1 and notice the difference for yourself. It's a great first step to investing in your health, and that's why they've been a proud partner of mine for so long. Try AG1 and get a free bottle of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/selfwork. That's a $48 value for free if you go to drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. Last month, I received an email from a listener who shared with me her own story of depression and her attempts to perfectly hide it. Her email is really too long to use all of it, but here's the core of her message to me. We'll start where she begins therapy, and what triggered her awareness of the need for it and how she benefited. But there was one sentence that really caught my eye that led me to writing about the topic of self-blame and shame, what I call in the title, the shame and blame game. This listener had been struggling but doing okay until, and now I quote, "Then one of the few people I felt had really seen and accepted me tried to commit suicide because he'd been diagnosed with a serious illness which later turned out to be a misdiagnosis. This set off so much anxiety and fear of abandon in me, I started working with a therapist. Together with her, I began to unravel a childhood of emotional neglect and abuse and years of bullying in primary school. Before that, I had only talked about this with my sister, who is the only other person who knows how bad it was in our childhood. Emotional neglect and abuse, parentifying from a mother with traits of borderline personality disorder, and an emotionally unavailable father. And then bullying by classmates in school because I was precocious and intellectually gifted. But even with the therapist, I didn't mention feeling high-functioning depression or having vague suicidal ideation. I felt this would scare her too much, and it scared me too. So much so that I really didn't want to talk about it and only partly admitted it to myself. Only having this friend who had been through it and who I felt had accepted me on a level no one else had done before made me begin to accept this depression and even suicidal thinking in myself. Because I had no problems accepting it in him and not judging him for it, then I decided I had to accept it in myself." And she goes on, "As you're probably very familiar with, the hidden depression and suicidal ideation had its source in a very strong feeling of shame about myself and low self-worth. And here's the part that got my attention." Well, all of it had my attention, but my special attention. "And that I had let myself be bullied and misused by my mother for parentification." So she tells the story of just beginning to admit the shame, and the feeling of being ashamed for feeling shame helped her a lot with her therapist. And she says this was the start to a lot of healing. So what is this listener saying? She writes clearly that it was her empathy and compassion for her friend that tried to kill himself that was her first step toward getting therapy. She needed help to soothe her own fears about him doing so. But then out came the stuff that had been stuck away, her memories and feelings about how she'd been treated at home and school. And although feeling she was making great progress with the therapist, she was still holding back, not telling the therapist about the depth of her sadness or loneliness or despair, and certainly not revealing thoughts of a welcome death, as they're often called. I've had this happen lots of times in therapy, where someone tells me several months into therapy, "I was really scared to be honest with you at the beginning." So that's not weird or abnormal. Trust has to be earned. But it is so sad to me that she was having this thinking, and even with a therapist she really, really liked, she was struggling to be completely transparent. But then light started coming on about the true source of her hidden depression. But then she used the phrase, "and that I had let myself be bullied and misused by my mother for parentification." She also revealed to me in a separate part of her email that I'm not reading that she'd been adopted and had carried a sense of rejection by her birth parents. But did she really let it happen? Allowed it? Really? I don't think so. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, you create your own happiness, it's your choices that are important, et cetera, et cetera. But I think you could carry that too far. When you say, and oh, by the way, I allowed my abuse and my neglect. Have you heard someone say it'll only hurt my feelings if I allow it? Well, again, maybe as an adult that's true, but you were a child. So why might someone cope with those memories and that reality by telling themselves they allowed it to happen, that they played a significant role in the creation of what caused them pain? Let's stop for a minute and talk a second about parentification. It's when a parent demands or manipulates, or in some cases, the child may feel required to take more of a parental role, either with the parent themselves or with their siblings or both. It's also sometimes called playing a pseudo-adult role. You're still a child, but you play the role of the adult. you do what the adult is supposed to be doing. And in so doing, you lose your own childhood. So that's what she felt like she got from her mother with borderline traits. What seems to be going on is that for years, this listener believed herself to be at fault. When I have someone tell me this, that they feel responsible, I note two things. And if you feel this way, I really want you to listen today. First, I've probably got someone who has the character trait of responsibility, which is healthy, but they likely take too much responsibility, which is a trait of perfectly hidden depression. Second, what it tells me or suggests to me, although I'm not absolutely certain, that somehow that allowance or that self-blame helped them push away the reality of the pain that was inherent in their family, that no one protected them, that no one was there for them or took care of them. That really hurts and hurts deeply. But if I'm to blame, what purpose is that serving? Let's see if I can explain what I mean using the fact that she was bullied. Let's say a bully at school pushed her down every morning. No matter the mud or the rain or how much she was hurt physically or emotionally. So if you look back, or she looks back, and says, oh, I allowed that to happen, that somehow she was somewhat to blame, it gives her more of a sense of control. If I allowed it, you know what? I can disallow it and feel in control. Now, this isn't the same thing as having control over what you think about the bullying. That's a mental exercise or skill, and it's not the same as standing up to the bully, pushing the bully down, or threatening the bully in some way. Sometimes that works, although it almost always works in Disney movies. That's taking action. But that's not what this listener was doing. She was telling herself, I'm allowing this to happen. I'm letting someone hurt me, so it's my fault. I'm to blame. Maybe she didn't quite carry that far, but I've worked with a lot of people who do. Can you hear the weird sense of control that might give her or you? So let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Did you know that perimenopause can begin as early as 35 or 40? If you're a woman, you may have experienced subtle hormonal changes much earlier than we used to believe menopause began, and you don't know what to do or where to get really good information. Perimenopause, or the years prior to the time when your body begins to slow down and eventually stop menstruating, it's a natural process, as is menopause itself, but that doesn't mean they don't have their own unique difficulties. Certainly, perimenopause threw me for some emotional loops, and some of those loops can be heavily intertwined with mental and emotional struggles. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. That's 50 orders in the time it takes you to listen to Self-Work. Now, for a limited time, you could get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. I'm going to give you a trigger warning because I'm about to talk about a rape victim that I saw many years ago. So please listen with care. The intervention abuse hotlines can be found in the show notes. I learned this whole concept of self-blame giving you a sense of control long ago from a client who'd been randomly chosen by an escaped prisoner as his rape victim. He'd broken into her apartment, again randomly, busted through the lock she had on the door, grabbed a butcher knife from the kitchen, and threatened to kill her if she didn't do as she was told. And then he raped her. About 3 or 4 sessions into therapy, she looked at me, and her very words were, I knew I shouldn't have lived in that neighborhood. Maybe he saw me out jogging. Now, I knew the neighborhood where this person lived. There was nothing wrong with that neighborhood. There were lots of joggers on the trails. It was full of student apartments, and many university students lived there. Now, it wasn't the fanciest by any means, but it was fine. Of course, it had not been fine the day she was assaulted. What I realized at that very moment, that if she could tell herself she'd somehow been to blame, she could also follow that up with, so if I don't live in that neighborhood, if I stop jogging, then I'll feel more in control of my life. If I allowed it, I can get control over it. Does that make sense to you? I hope so. Again, it's not rational, or it's not perhaps long-term healthy, but it's something we all do. or can't do. So let's get back to the listener who wrote in. She's been carrying around this idea that I let myself be bullied and misused by my mother. Maybe that offers more of a sense that she was in control, or if you do it, if you're in control. So what I often ask clients to do is this, to challenge that belief. I ask them to ask to volunteer in their church's kindergarten class, or maybe to babysit a friend's young children, or simply go watch a Saturday morning 5-year-old or 6-year-old soccer game. And I ask them to imagine saying to one of those children who are on the playground or who they're babysitting or at the soccer game. So you very seriously look at that child and say, you know, if you're getting hurt by someone or manipulated by someone, even a parent, you're allowing it. They look at me just aghast. Of course I wouldn't say that to a child. And I ask them gently, then why are you saying it to yourself? What's the reason you're taking blame for something you had very little to no control over? Again, this isn't the same as having control over how you handle it or what you may tell yourself about it. What's unfair to you is for you to carry shame and blame for what you did not cause or create. This listener also gave me a list of what helped her to stop this, self-compassion being foremost. Here's her list. I faced a difficult childhood and admitted what happened and that it was abusive. I learned how to feel and then release difficult emotions in the body. I admitted the shame and the feeling of being ashamed for feeling shame. I did inner child work and learned to extend compassion to myself, something I felt like completely in my childhood. I journaled to be able to admit difficult thoughts I didn't want anyone else to know. And I learned to express those difficult emotions through fiction writing and making images. So very creative means, right? So basically what she's saying, and I could not agree with her more, is that self-compassion is the antidote to blame. Realizing that you were a child. Realizing that you had very little to no control. This listener did wonderful work with her therapist, obviously. All of these steps I do with my own clients. I especially like the realization, the sinking in of the level of neglect and abuse she suffered. That's not self-pity. It's acknowledgement, and there's a huge difference. I did a recent podcast on learning how to feel and release difficult emotions, which you may want to listen to. And I also talk about this on camera on my new YouTube channel, which I will have a link to in the show notes. And then she had to work through shame for feeling shame. The confusion of that in and of itself would be very helpful. Just remember, you did what a child would do. You saw what happened through a child's eyes. And children often blame themselves. In some ways, it keeps them sane. Because recognizing the extent of the chaos or violence or neglect of your own childhood can lead to even stronger feelings of sadness and anger, or confusion, or overwhelm. Basically, what this listener learned was that what had happened was not her fault. I recently saw a clip that I hadn't seen in years. Robin Williams was playing Matt Damon's therapist in the 1997 film Good Will Hunting, which is a superb movie in my eyes. Watch it if you want to see the power of coming to believe something wasn't your fault. And again, be careful of abuse triggers. I'll have the link, at least to the clip, in your show notes. So abuse, neglect, manipulation, and bullying wasn't your fault then, and it's not your fault now. It's simply not your fault.
SpeakPipe message from Dr. Margaret Rutherford.com.
The listener voicemail for today is a short, quick, but very poignant question from a mom who sees her daughter as struggling inside the cage of intense perfectionism or perfectly hidden depression.
My 37-year-old daughter lives with this perfectly hidden depression every day, and I am scared to death for her. How can I help her?
My first advice for anyone approaching a loved one, a friend, an adult child, that the best, healthiest way of approaching is to talk about you, not in a self-centered way, but instead of saying, you just seem so pressured all the time, you say, I don't think I've seen you take a break in weeks. Hear the difference? You don't start out with a you word. You start out by saying I. It may seem subtle, but basically you're approaching by talking more about your own observations and experience with them rather than commenting on them directly. It also sounds as if this mother is feeling a lot of fear about her daughter. And intense fear is a very strong feeling that can make her approach more urgent. And so if her daughter is perfectly hiding depression, actually, if she approaches urgently, her daughter is much more likely to jump in to calm her down. Oh, Mom, I'd never do that. You worry too much. It shuts the conversation down. So instead of saying, I'm just so scared that you'll hurt yourself, and approaching with urgency, instead you might say, I've heard about this dynamic called perfectly hidden depression, and sometimes when someone seems really great on the surface, they aren't so great after all. In fact, this woman who writes about it says it could be pretty self-destructive. Can I give you a couple of things to read? I think you might be interested. You're not directly talking about your fear, so you don't invite her to take care of you. But you introduce the topic to her. You get her attention in a softer, more open way. Then, if she shuts you down, you might say, it would mean a lot to me if you looked at it. Why don't I take the kids this afternoon? Or something like that. So you take action to get some of the pressure off of her. She might not read the material, but she sees that your concern is very real and you're acting on it. This may seem like I'm recommending beating around the bush. What a therapist might say to someone they suspect might be struggling is this. I've worked with people before that live under the same kind of pressure you do, and sometimes they have thoughts of hurting themselves. No one can take that kind of pressure for a long time. Do you ever feel that way? The painful and ironic thing is that a therapist can ask that kind of question, and it seems more acceptable. This listener, being her daughter's mom, may be less likely to be able to state those kinds of things. Parents have a lot of power for their kids, even their adult kids. So suggesting you'll pay for therapy or doing something that shows your concern is often the way to go. You know, if you have a relationship where you've been really blunt with one another, then that might work. There's no golden key here. But I hope my suggestions are helpful. Approach not with urgency. Be proactive. And don't talk about what you see, but make I statements. As always, thank you for being here at Self Work. I'm getting asked to do more and more speaking, and I love that. Actually, you know, I have panic disorder, and I actually have a fear of speaking. So I am leaning into that fear for sure in 2025. Just know I would love to speak to your group or organization, and you can contact me via my website so that we can chat. That's drmargaretrutherford.com. And if you subscribe, you will get one newsletter a week with my podcast and my blog post. It's a great way to keep in touch with me. And you get a little free book, a little free ebook. It's an interesting workbook to work through. I'm right in the middle of writing a workbook for perfectly hidden depression. I'm really excited about it. I'm approaching the topic very differently than I did in the book. So I'll let you know when that's available. It'll be a few more months for sure. Again, thank you for being here. It means so very much. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I actually have a son out in LA, and so the fires there are absolutely terrifying. And we're thinking about all of you. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.